Our first talk of the second session, as we discussed, whether it's afternoon or evening or just late morning, depends on your time zone, is Eugene Gorski from the University of California, Davis, who will tell us about parabolic Hilbert schemes via the Dunkel-Opdahl subalgebra.
Thank you very much. So thanks for the organizers for this very nice conference. I feel like I follow more talks than usual. Maybe there is like less distraction because there are no actual people. I don't know, but it's so weird. Anyway, so this is a joint work with Jose Cimental and Monica Vazirani, also at UC Davis. And I'll speak about Hilbert scheme of points on singular curves and the rational Chernik algebras via this Dunkel-Opdahl subalgebra. So first of all, what is a rational Chernik algebra? So it has generators x1 through xn, yy through yn, and a group algebra of symmetric group. And the relations are that x is commute between themselves, y commute between themselves. They interact with Sn as they would be expected, but the interesting relations are commutation relations between x's and y's. And so y's and x's with different indices commute to a transposition up to a factor, and y's with x's with the same index commute with identity plus sum of transpositions again up to a factor. And so there are two parameters here, t and c. In many places in the literature, people just use one parameter c and set t is equal to 1. But sometimes it's useful to set t is equal to 0. And this will be a slightly different algebra, and we'll discuss it in the end of the talk. So, but of course, if you rescale both t and c simultaneously, you get the same algebra because you can see it from the relations. So this is the algebra, and again, for experts, it's easier for this setup to work with a Chernik algebra associated to a permutation representation of Sn and not the reflection representation. Although in principle, you can redo all this for reflection representation. Okay. So this algebra has very nice representation category. It has some kind of category O, and it's a highest weight category with standard modules defined as follows. So you start from a reducible representation of Sn, and then you induce up to Chernik algebra, which practically means that you take this irreducible representation and you multiply by polynomials and x's. So you think of it as a copy, as a representation of polynomials in y's smash Sn, where Sn acts as usual and y's act by 0 on V lambda. And then from this, you induce up to the whole Chernik algebra. So size-wise, it's just V lambda times polynomial and x's. And it's known that delta lambda has unique simple quotient, which is denoted by LC of lambda. And all this depends on parameter C. And then a theorem from about 10 or 15 years ago by Ginzburg, Guay, Opdahl, Rukia, Barrett setting of Ginzburg, describes a lot of facts about this representation category. And I'll say more a bit about it later, but let me mention some facts which are useful. So if C is irrational or has denominator greater than n, so it was all about Sn, then actually standard module is irreducible for all lambda. But if your denominator, for example, is equal to n, you have interesting representation theory, and the standard module is irreducible unless lambda is a hook, it has a non-trivial submodule if it is a hook, but the only interesting morphisms between standard modules for hook form this BGG resolution. So there is a map from standard module for a hook to standard module for a next hook, and they form this kind of chain. Composition is zero just because there are no morphisms from hooks of distance two. And the simple module is just the quotient of the standard module by the image of the next one. And this is it. And maybe let me mention that all these facts, especially in this work of Ginzburg, Guay, Opdahl, and Rukia, they were proved using Knizhnik Zimological Functor. So Knizhnik Zimological Functor relates representation theory of HC and this category O, and representation theory of Hecke algebra at root of unity. So you take Hecke algebra with parameter Q, which is exponential of 2 pi C. And then if C is rational, this means that Q is the root of unity. And then there is this functor, and it's defined analytically using complex analysis, essentially because you look at monoderms of some connections. And so one of the goals of this talk is to give a new presentation, or rather slightly different presentation of this algebra, to construct explicit bases in standard and simple modules, and to give new combinatorial proof of the previous theorem by Ginzburg, Ogden-Rupier, and other people, and relate all this representation theory to algebraic geometry of parabolic Hilbert schemes of points on singular curves. And I have to say right away that this new presentation was considered in slightly different form by Suzuki, Griffiths, and Webster, and other people. So it's not so new, we just applied it slightly differently. Okay. And so for this, let me mention a fine symmetric group, an extended defined symmetric group. So it's defined as a set of n periodic permutations of the integers, so bijections from z to z, such that p of I plus n is p of I plus n. And it's determined by this window notation where I just fix the images of p of 1 through p of n. And then the most important thing, which will be important for us, is that it has standard generators of Sn and an extra element pi, which shifts I by 1. And so normally people, of course, consider this extended defined symmetric group as a group with this Si and pi. Sometimes you add a generator as 0 by combining them, and pi is invertible. But you can consider a positive monoid generated just by S's and pi, but you not allow pi inverse. So S's are inverses of themselves, but you don't allow pi to be invertible. And then it's easy to check that this positive monoid consists of all permutations such that in window notation, all entries are positive. Or equivalently, P of I is positive for all positive I. Okay, so this is a sub set of extended defined symmetric group, which is closed under multiplication, but not closed under taking inverses. All right, so here is the new presentation of the algebra. So we start with this operators constructed first by Dunkel and Obdam. So there are xi, yi minus a combination of transpositions. So this is the juiciest Murphy element in Sn, and then you add xi, yi with a coefficient. So this will be our generators, and the key fact about them, which was observed by Dunkel of them, that they commute. So this is a huge commutative subalgebra in rational Cherniak algebra. And there are two more generators, which are essentially x1 and y1, but it's easier to work with x1 twisted by a full cycle and y1 twisted by a full cycle. So we call them tau and lambda. And so the algebra is generated by all these UIs, Si are generators of symmetric group, tau and lambda. And the relations are as follows. So UIs commute between themselves. UIs and Si's almost commute and they form degenerate defined Hecke algebra with parameter C. So Si and Ui with distant indices commute and its closed indices relate like this. Then tau kind of shifts Ui by one, and then if you apply it to the last Un, then it goes back to U1 shifted by T. So tau in some sense act as this operator pi in the fine symmetric group. Lambda also acts as some kind of analog of pi in the fine symmetric group, so it shifts Ui's backwards. And then there are all these relations between Si and tau, so Si, tau also shifts Si, and tau square sends S1 to Sn minus 1. And these are precisely the relations satisfied by pi and Si in the extended defined symmetric group. So this weird relation with tau square, it actually has a clear meaning, because somehow if tau would be invertible, this means that you conjugate S1 twice by tau squared, then you get Sn minus 1. And that is just means that if you conjugate it once by tau, you get to a zero, and then you get again to Sn minus 1. But tau is not invertible, and so you have to be careful with that, and so you just write relation like this, and you can check that this is actually enough relations to describe this positive monoid. And exactly the same story in opposite direction with lambda, so again, lambda is not invertible, but somehow if you conjugate by lambda square S1, you get Sn minus 1. And there are three more relations which kind of relate tau and lambda. So before they were unrelated. So the product one way is U1. That's easy to see. That this is just x1, y1. The product the other way will be un plus t. And then there is this weird relation, which is also useful. And so the content is the theorem that these relations are sufficient to describe rational training algebra. And of course, the comment is that in principle, you can eliminate all u's. You can just work with tau, lambda, and Sn. But in practice, it's really useful to keep u's and keep all these relations and work with this. Okay? Some questions? So yeah, UI in symmetric group case appeared before Dunkelpp dam. Okay, maybe, I'm not sure. Okay, and so with this, so yeah, well, I've already mentioned that this presentation appeared in the work of Griffith and especially Suzuki and Webster. And in this presentation, we have several interesting subalgebras. In particular, UI and SI generate degenerate affine Hecke. SI and Tai generate a copy of a positive affine monoid. And so tau corresponds to pi, but it's not invertible. And you can identify this positive affine monoid with just Ries product of polynomials in X's and Sn. But
Zhenya, I can ask a question?
Yeah, sure.
This UIs, what do they correspond to in the Daha? Do they have any meaning?
What does they correspond to in the Daha? So they're generators of trigonometric Cherenkov algebra. So, I mean, Suzuki would phrase it as embedding of rational Cherenkov algebra into trigonometric one. And so these are generators of trigonometric. But I'm not sure about Daha.
And then Katarina also has a question.
Yes. So is there a good explanation why what this XI, YI term means? I mean, the rest I understand, of course, but.
You want something degree zero, I would say. So xi have degree plus one, y have degree minus one, and you want something of degree zero if you want to diagonalize them.
Yeah, okay.
But also they correspond to trigonometric Cherenkov algebra, I guess, in Dunkelpp presentation. And there is, yeah. But I think, like, I mean, for practical purposes, what people did, like what Suzuki and Griffith and other people did. So you want to diagonalize these UIs. And so if you want to diagonalize something, it's better be degree zero. Okay. Yes. And so SI and tau generate a copy of positive affine monoid. Again, tau is not invertible. And SI and lambda generate a copy of the same monoid, but now lambda is pi inverse. So this is kind of inverse of this positive monoid. And so now with this, so we can reprove like all representation theory of rational Cherenkov algebra on most of it without applying to.
Did you just freeze for everyone else? No, maybe not.
Say it again. Can you hear me? Hello?
I think this was a mistake.
Yeah, I can hear you.
So it works, right?
Yeah, go ahead, Eugene.
Okay. Yeah. So in particular, you can avoid using KZ functor in many places. So the key theorem that we prove is that the standard module has a basis of the following form. So the basis is labeled by pairs of standard tableau shape lambda and A, which is a vector with non-negative entries of n integers. And then the basis is not so hard to construct, but the key fact is that the action of UI is triangular with respect to certain order in this basis. And we can compute generalized eigenvalues, and they're given by as follows. So this is AI minus the content of the box in T. So let me unpack this. So first of all, if I have the vector A, I can find the permutation which sorts A. And I pick the minimal length permutation which sorts A. This is the GA of I. Then I look at this box inside standard Young tableau labeled by the GA of I, take the content, multiply by C, and add AI. So this minimal length permutation that sorts A is kind of tricky, but in practice, it's very easy to compute all these things. And again, the key fact, which is kind of easy to see from this presentation, but this is really the key for everything, that the action is triangular, so we know generalized eigenvalues right away. And so the basis can be obtained by just applying this positive braid monoid to eigenbasis in V lambda. And then the order is related to lexicographic order on this positive braid monoid in window notation. So there is some combinatorics there, but that's what it is. And in fact, we can do slightly more. So we have a result like how to decompose this as a representation of the generally defined Heckius. So it's filtered by some modules which we can identify. Okay. And so what are the consequences of this? So in particular, once we know the generalized eigenvalues for UIs for all C, we can say that, for example, if C is irrational, then this module is irreducible just because all these eigenvalues are different for different modules and for different vectors, and so they never match, and so there are no morphisms. The same way is slightly more complicated. If C is rational with denominator B, there is a morphism from standard module to standard module if they have the same B core. And if the denominator is bigger than n, it's irreducible. And so for this, you don't need the UIs to be semi-simple. You don't need to be diagonalizable in principle. This just works. If it is semi-simple, though, you can say more. And that was done by Griffith before. We slightly rewrite his results. So then the joint spectrum of UI is simple. All UIs are diagonalizable. And we can actually find an eigenbasis for UIs such that they act with this eigenvalues wi. Tau sends eigenvector to eigenvector, shifted by pi. And lambda sends eigenvector to eigenvector times the eigenvalue for u1. And then the action of Sn is a bit more complicated. It's this basically Young semi-normal construction. So there is some formula with rational functions, but you can compute it in this case as well. And also in this case, we can compute all non-zero maps within all standard modules. So since we're in denominator n case, all non-zero maps are just maps in the BGG resolution. But again, in this basis, we can compute it very explicitly. So with, because everything is semi-simple, you know that the map should send eigenvector to another eigenvector or zero. And there is an interesting bijection between like standard, the pair of vector and standard tableau on one side and the vector and standard tableau on the other side. And so let me maybe give you an example of how this works. So again, in this case, the interesting modules, they come from Hooke representations of Sn. They correspond to exterior powers of reflection representation or partition n minus l and 1l. And then in this partition, again, in the standard module, the basis is parameterized by a pair integer vector and tableau. And in this tableau, we can look at the label of the box at the bottom of this hook. So this is the box with the smallest content in this hook, in this tableau. And then we can just describe the basis in simple modules just by looking at this combinatorics. So simple module corresponding to a hook has a basis indexed by pairs A and T. So T is again standard tableau of the same hook shape. And A satisfies some inequalities. And inequalities are like this. So you take A with this index G A inverse of N minus M is less than A J inverse of I L. Recall that GA is the permutation which sorts this vector A of minimal length. And then there is a second inequality. So if it is equal to, if the difference is equal to M, then you have this inequality between G's. So I understand it's hard to parse. So in this trivial module case, so if you just induce representation from trivial module and take the simple quotient, then the basis is actually quite cute. So it just, so there are no standard, there is just one standard tableau in this case. You just have this Young diagram. And then the inequalities are that for every pair of A's, the difference is less than M. And then if the difference less than or equal to M, and then if it is exactly equal to M, then the one with the smaller number is always to the right of the bigger number. So this is some very explicit combinatorial condition that we have here. And this theorem above is some kind of generalization of that to the case of hooks and to the case of more general partitions. And so again, in principle, all this is done just by looking at spectrum and trying to look like that this maps should send eigenvector for use to eigenvector for use, and how this could match, how the eigenvalues could match for all use. And I think that's a place for a break. And there were some questions which I missed, I'm sorry.
No, I think most of the questions are either pretty far away or...
Yeah. Okay, I mean, we have a break, so let me...
I mean, everybody through. Can unmute himself or herself.
Everyone should be able to unmute.
Yeah, so maybe, yeah, but first of all, I should mention, so for cycloatomic rational three nuclear algebra, the generalization of this, it was done by Stephen Griffith. Why do we need monoid instead of the group? Because tau is not invertible and pi is not invertible in this bit. So tau is not invertible and lambda is not invertible. So you have these two extra generators. They kind of behave like pi in the affine symmetric group, but they're not invertible. And okay.
I think it's not true that the monoid is generated by the generators that you said.
Why?
I mean, take permutation which begins with zero. I mean, with one or like with a minimal element, how do you reduce it to a smaller permutation?
I mean, you either sort it or use pi.
But it begins with zero, so you cannot use pi.
We can talk later. I'm not sure I understand the question.
Maybe it's stupid, but I'm just confused.
Who drew your intermission slide?
Yeah, my daughter.
That's what I thought. It was good.
Okay. Should we continue?
Sure. So now I want to switch completely from algebra to geometry and talk like how this perspective, which was again already there, the work of many people, how you can use it to actually understand geometry better. And that's what dear to my heart. So you start from singular curve, x to the m is equal to y to the n on the plane. And the greatest common divisor of m and n is 1. So this is actually an irreducible curve with some kind of cusp at the origin. And then you can look at the Hilbert scheme of this curve. So how does it look like? So first of all, you have a local ring of functions there. So this is just functions in x and y quotient by relation that x to the m is equal to y to the n. And then in this ring, you can think of it in various ways, but one way is to find the basis. So you just find the basis where you have 1, y up to y to the n minus 1. And then y to the n is equal to x to the m. So yeah, all power series in x, but you allow just powers of y, which are from 1 to y to the n minus 1. And then it's free over x, and then multiplication by y, x is an operator which sends 1 to y to y square, and so on. And y to the n minus 1 to x to the m. So you can think of it as just this lattice over C of x with an interesting action of multiplication by y. And then we define the Hilbert scheme as the space of ideals in O of codimension k. And again, if we want to think of it more algebraically, you can think of it as a subspace in C of x with this basis, which is invariant under multiplication of X. So this is a sublattice, and also invariant under multiplication of Y, which is important. And also we can consider a parabolic Hilbert scheme, which is the space of flags of ideals, where JK is inside JK plus one, contain JK plus one and so on. And the last one, JK plus N minus one, contains JK plus N, which is X JK. So all of these are ideals. And again, the last one is X times the first one. And maybe let me add a comment here that a similar construction appeared in, so this construction is motivated by my previous work with Anton and Eric Carlson when we considered this parabolic Hilbert scheme on the plane. But here we look at it for a single curve. It's kind of the same idea. And here we have a choice. So somehow the choice, so Hilbert scheme is just defined as a space of ideals. Here we choose a projection of the curve because we multiply by X, we can choose to multiply by Y. And then this would be different. And in particular, codimension of J mod JK plus N, it is equal to N, while codimension of J mod Y, J would equal to M. So in principle, we have two different constructions and there is a choice here. All right. And then combinatorially, we can think of the fixed point of the action. So this curve in particular is quasi-homogeneous. There is an action of C star, and it gives an action of C star on the Hilbert scheme and on parabolic Hilbert scheme. And fixed points for the Hilbert scheme will be monomial ideals. So there will be staircases in the strip. So we have a strip of height n, and the all squares in the strip, they form a basis in O, in the ring of functions on the curve. And if I have an ideal, this is some kind of staircase, and the condition is that the width of the staircase is at most M. And the reason is quite clear, because for example, I have this cell labeled by one, so it corresponds to X cubed Y square. If I multiply it by an extra Y, I get X cubed Y cube, but I know that y cube is equal to x to the fourth. So if it contains this box labeled by one, it must contain this box labeled by two, so that it's invariant under y. And so in particular, the fixed points correspond to staircases on the Hilbert scheme. They correspond to staircases of widths at most m, and on the flag Hilbert scheme, they correspond to staircase with a labeling of entries right to the right of the staircase, so that we know which entries to remove. And so to this diagram, I can associate a flag of monomial ideals. In particular here, if I include 1, 2, and 3, I get ideal generated by X cubed Y square, which is number one. It automatically contains this number two, and X five Y is this number three. Then the next ideal would be the same thing when I remove one, and it will be X four Y square, X five Y, and X seven, and so on. So you have a flag of monomial ideals, and then you can study them in the combinatorics. And so here is the theorem. So there is an action of rational Chudnik algebra with parameters M and N in localized equivariant homology of the union of all these parabolic Hilbert schemes. And the corresponding representation is isomorphic to this reducible representation LMN. So in particular, there is a bijection. So there are the staircases, and there is a bijection between the staircases and the eigenvectors, which we described before. When we have just tuples of integers, in this case, just tuples of integers satisfying some inequalities. And these are the same inequalities that you see here in some sense. And so how does this representation work? So again, I would say it's surprisingly easy, and it's much easier than many other constructions that appeared here. And again, it's not super new, but slightly different. So you have the following things. So first of all, these operators UI, they correspond to line bundles. So you have this flag of ideals, you can take quotients, and the quotient of these ideals gives a line bundle on this thing. By some weird reason, you need to relabel them. So you need to swap the order of these line bundles to get used correctly. That's fine. So un plus one minus I correspond to line bundle Li. Then action of Sn is given by some kind of Springer-like action when you forget one flag in the middle and you push forward and pull back and you can do it very carefully. And then the interesting thing is this tau. So tau was kind of twisted multiplication by x1, but here is just a sliding of the flag. So you have a flag of ideals, and it starts from jk, it ends at jk plus n, which is a x times jk. And you just forget about jk, you start from jk plus 1, and you add jk plus n plus 1, and they end, which is x jk plus 1. So this is just a map of spaces. It's not some weird correspondence. And of course, it induces a map on homology, and this is just tau. And it sends fixed points to fixed points, it sends staircases to staircases, so everything is easy. And then a more subtle thing, which is new in this rational situation, is that the image of tau, so how would you describe the image of tau, of t? It's the set of flags where next to last flag is divisible by x. And so if it's divisible by x, then you can divide by x and get back to this construction on the left. And so when it's divisible by x, you can check that this condition defines the zero locus of a section of some explicit line bundle. And then you can use a Gaussian map to define an operator from homology on of space on the right to homology of space on the left. And this is all. So somehow this is much easier than many constructions of various actions on Hilbert schemes that we all know and love. So there are no Nakajima correspondences, there are no kind of complicated things. And the reason why there are no, because somehow this P Hilp is already a Nakajima correspondence itself somehow. It already has a lot of flags in it. But that's just true. And then you need, so there are potentially two different ways to check relations. So one way is dramatically check all the relations between these operators in geometry, and that would be nice, but we were lazy. And instead we just localized to fixed points and check that in fixed points, all these operators agree with the operators that we defined before in the basis for the trivial, for the simple representation. And so if they agree, they must satisfy the same relations. And so again, for this, you need localization. So I think an interesting open question is, does it work in non-localized equivariant homology? So do these equations satisfy geometrically or not? But yeah, that we don't know. And again, maybe it's a good place to refer to the paper with Anton and Eric, where we had this parabolic Hilbert scheme for the plane. So all Hilbert scheme, all points on the plane C2, and you can define the same kind of construction and very similar operators. And the corresponding algebra that we get is this algebra AQT that Anton and Eric constructed in combinatorial setup, but there is a geometric interpretation using these things. But this lambda appears to be new and not appeared there. Okay. And another interesting feature is that you can take the limit as m goes to infinity. And then you add a curve y to the n is equal to x to the m. If we take the limit, this is non-reduced curve y to the n is equal to zero. And personally, I haven't seen like any constructions geometric with Hilbert schemes of non-reduced curves, so they're important for many reasons. But you can just take the limit of what happened here. So in particular, the fixed points are like the staircases of bounded width. You ignore this bound on the width, and then you have all staircases in the strip. And then the same way, so you had polynomial representation of rational Schrödinger algebra with this nice basis, and you just take the limit and it just works. So all the formulas for the action of all these operators, they just extend to this case nicely. And the result is this, not the simple representation, but the polynomial representation of rational Schrödinger algebra at t is equal to zero. And maybe one remark here is that, so at t is equal to zero, it's well known that the algebra has a huge center given by symmetric polynomials in axes. And you can ask what it does it mean geometrically, and we don't know that. So I don't know, but it would be nice to understand like where the center comes from for these non-reduced curves. But I think like anything about Hilbert schemes of non-reduced curves is very much wide open, but very interesting and also related to not homology and other things. Okay, so, let me go to
The unique graded quotient of this delta 0, 1?
No.
this has a geometric interpretation.
I don't know. That would be nice. Because somehow this is just the whole Hilbert scheme. The question, I mean, what is unique simple quotient? So the symmetric functions in X's, they are in the center of the algebra at t is equal to zero. And you can just quotient by all the symmetric function in X's. And so I think this is equivalent to finding the geometric interpretation of those. And that would be nice, but I don't know. And also Ben says that it should hold in non-localized homology because this is related to Coulomb branch, and that I'll mention in a second. Yes. And yeah, maybe another thing. So we localize here. So in principle, you can ask what's going on. So you can check. It's not completely obvious, but the space is paved by a fine cell. So all homology is even. The space is equivalently formal. So at least like homology is free over equivalent homology of a point. But the action, you still need to check things. Right. And so this. And now, so I want to mention the relation to previous work and to some very recent work, which I find very exciting. So previous work was a lot of work related to trigonometric Cherenkov algebra. So if you, instead of considering Hilbert scheme of points, you consider Feinstringer fibers, then a lot of work starting from Voronyolov-Serova, Lustig, Oblomkov-Yun, and especially Yun, they defined an action of trigonometric Cherenkov algebra on homology of certain Feinstringer fiber in a fine flag variety, which also is kind of related to this. But the relation to rational Cherenkov algebra was also, so it appeared in Oblomkov-Yun in particular, but it was very much roundabout. So you have to embed rational to trigonometric, which is more or less what we do here, but also on geometric side, you need to do a lot of work. So you need to consider perverse filtration on homology, you need to embed the spectral curves in a family of spectral curves. And so somehow you need to use this trigonometric and you need to use a lot of geometry there. And somehow I feel that like the construction that we have here is much easier than that because you kind of, you just don't think about the action of trigonometric Cherenkov algebra and you don't think about affine Springer fibers and you just do it directly. But maybe again, it's not so important. What is more important, I think, is this recent result of Gardner and Kivenin when they say that instead of classical affine Springer fibers, you should look at generalized affine Springer fibers. So here's the statement. So you start from any plane curve singularity, like absolutely any. You don't have any restrictions. It shouldn't be of this type x to the m is equal to y to the n. You can start from any plane curve singularity. You choose a projection to a line. So that was our map x. And you want the projection to have degree n. And then the claim is that this all Hilbert schemes of points is just a generalized affine Springer fiber in the sense of Brown, Finkelberg, and Nakajima. And in their big BFN theory, you need to choose a group, and the group is GLN, and you need to choose a representation, and representation is a joint plus the vector representation. And then to define the Feinstringer fiber, you need to choose a vector in this representation, and this is basically the choice of a vector is, so you identify Cn with Cn of O with this ring of functions on the curve, and the vector is like one in the ring of functions on the curve, and the matrix that you get in JLN will be the action of Y on this ring of functions on the curve, basically. So this is very clear and transparent, and also this parabolic Hilbert scheme, which we use, you can also interpret in this term, so you just need to insert this Ivachori subgroup somewhere and say how it's related to Ivachori. So this is again some version of generalized affine Springer fiber, when you have not only group and representation, but also you choose a parahoric subgroup and you can do this. And so why this is important? Because first of all, given G and V as above, so Brauerman, Finkelberg, and Nakajima defined a certain algebra, which is called Coulomb branch algebra, and its non-commutative version. And then in very big generality, there was a recent paper by Hilburn, Kamser, and Weeks, and they proved that this Coulomb branch algebra associated to GNV acts in homology of all generalized Sprengel fibers corresponding to GNV. So if a Sprengel fiber is kind of random, then you have this commutative algebra which acts in homology. And if Sprengel fiber is additionally equivariant under loop rotation, then you can quantize everything, and non-commutative deformation of this Coulomb branch algebra acts on equivariant homology with respect to loop rotation of the generalized Sprengel fiber. And so in some sense, all that happened before is a special case of this construction, because you start from the group GLN, you start from representation, which is a joint plus the vector. Kodera and Nakajima identified explicitly quantum Coulomb branch algebra with the spherical rational Chernyk algebra. And so in particular, what Garner and Kivinen did, so they took the observation from last slide and they computed this section of Coulomb branch algebra on homology of the Hilbert scheme of points on this curve explicitly. And so again, this, if you look at the Hilbert scheme as opposed to parabolic Hilbert scheme, this would be the spherical rational Chernyk algebra. So in particular, that's a new construction or the same old construction of spherical rational Chernyk algebra on homology of this guy. And it would be interesting to upgrade it to parabolic version when you have parabolic Hilbert scheme of points and compare the action with the kind of elementary action that we constructed above. And I think I'll stop here.
Thanks very much for the nice. So are there more questions?
Right, so about this last thing, I just want to say, like, we can define on this parabolic level, like, you have an action, but comparing to this description in terms of fixed points, I don't know if that works outside the sort of spherical level, or at least I don't know how to make it work.
No, I think it shouldn't be very hard. I mean, the formulas Eugene wrote for the action, I mean, those are, they're the exact same formulas that are in my paper matching the...
Sure, but I mean, in general, like, changes of bases and things like this aren't easy. Like, maybe you can restrict this action. It's just trivial that it acts in the right way, but...
I don't know. I mean, I think, right? I mean, it's just like, right, there's a line operator whose endomorphisms are the trivial line operator whose endomorphisms are the spherical guy. And then there's this a bigger line operator using the flag variety whose endomorphisms are the full rational Chernyk algebra. And I think if you just take the same line operators you're using, but pair them with this bigger guy instead of the trivial, you're just gonna get their story.
Oh, absolutely. But yeah, I mean, there's still like some computation to do to verify that it's the same action on fixed points. But yeah, anyway.
Yeah, but also like I would be interested to see, I mean, maybe I'm just stupid. So like how explicitly, like you have this giant algebra, which is built out of this homology of this big BFN space, like how explicitly compare it to some operators that we see. I mean, if we can do it by localization, fine, but like maybe geometrically, like why does the same action as like shifting the flag and, you know, this.
But I mean, those are the formulas in my paper. Like,
okay.
No, I mean, the right, like you just interpret these things you're talking about as homology classes and those, like, right, this is the. I mean, right, it's much easier to do this because you have the flag variety in the picture. You're using the uniformity instead of the trivial line operator. So, I mean, I actually think it's one of these things where you just have to take three or four papers and understand all their notation, and then it'll be very easy.
Yeah, I guess that's my problem precisely.
Like, but does it mean you work with a different presentation? Why does it become easier then?
I guess what I'm saying is, like, I mean, you know, I wrote in my paper an isomorphism between, you know, some one of these BFN type spaces, the homology of that with the rational Chladni algebra in this SN case. And it's like exactly the same formulas that Eugene was writing for the action on the Hilbert scheme. So like, I mean, you have to actually write things down, but I think it's just, you write that projective Hilbert scheme as a fiber product, and then you use the fact that when you have a fiber product, you get an action of the convolution algebra on that. Like,
I mean, I guess secretly Eugene is also using this isomorph, like using like Atiyabad to have an isomorphism between the equivariant homology of the fixed points and the actual space. So you have to follow through that somehow to compare the two actions.
No, I would just say that like if you write, for example, this Kodera Nakajima isomorphism explicitly, it's pretty subtle, I would say. And so, like, in particular, representation that you get is a difference representation. So it takes some work to relate. But I mean, I agree that all formulas are the same. It's just a matter of time. Yes. Okay. So and understanding all the notations in all papers, which I'm very hard.
No, I agree. I mean,
Eugene, can I ask a question?
So I
was wondering, how do you get to the representation that's finite dimensional when you mod out by whatever the extra stuff is, like in your GL inversion going to the SL inversion? Do you have a way to get to a basis for that representation for L of Triv?
You have a basis, yes, but that was basis also was constructed by Griffith, I guess. But I think geometrically. Say again?
But geometrically, can you get it that way?
Yeah, geometrically, so you have an action of some operator, which is like the sum of x's. So you need the quotient by the sum of x's, roughly speaking. And that we see pretty explicitly, yes. But what kind of space it is, it's hard to say. I don't know. I mean, so we see this action of sum of x's pretty explicitly, I would say. But quotienting by that, I'm not sure what this means. So there is a... Let me restate differently. So if you look at all Hilbert schemes on a curve, so you have an interesting operator which kind of adds a point from a Hilbert scheme to the next Hilbert scheme. And then somehow in the limit, this Hilbert scheme stabilized to what is called compactified Jacobian of the curve. And that is a fine space. So it has a fine dimensional homology, and that homology is equivalent to LMN. But somehow if you want to compare homology properly, you need to put a certain filtration on homology and take associated graded. And that's precisely what was done by Blomkov and Yoon when they say that instead of looking at the Hilbert scheme, they look at this compactified Jacobian with perverse filtration. And there are like lots of technical difficulties there. So in some sense, yes, and that was in this Blomkov-Yoon paper, but yeah.
Okay, thanks.
So I wanted to ask you a bit more about this dependence on M. So how, can you say somehow how the formulas depend on M? Is it, can you just specialize totally naively or take this limit totally naively in the formula?
Yeah. I mean, you have this formula. Let me go back and just look at the eigenvalues. So somehow you have this AI and this content times C. So C is M over N. So if M is very large, then this second term becomes much bigger than the first term. And just ignore this AI. Okay. And somehow you have to check so that the weights specialize nicely. I mean, you have to rescale everything by M, but that's fine. You just kind of look at the second term. And then you have this action of SN by this kind of Jahn seminormal formulas. Again, you have to take the limit, but it also works. So this is pretty naive and, again, not so deep, I guess. And here again, so the action of tau and the action of lambda, they just work the same way. So the basis they has a nice limit and everything has a nice limit, yes.
So I know, sorry.
Can you expand the picture to get more modules, not only the LNM?
Say it again, I'm sorry.
So can you get more modules in a similar fashion outside the LNM trip, the construction that you showed?
Geometrically, that would be very nice, but I don't know how to do this. So yeah, you can try to take other generalized affine spring fibers, which are not Hilbert schemes. So the theorem of Gardner and Kunin said that all Hilbert schemes are generalized affine spring fibers, but not all generalized affine spring fibers are Hilbert schemes of curves. You need some extra conditions. So maybe you take the ones which don't satisfy this condition, and maybe they give you interesting representations. I don't know. That's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, in the trigonometric case, there is this construction of Westphal, but it's very unclear what to do here.
Eugene, I was about to ask you about, I was about to ask you a question that would be me guessing various parts of the connection with GNR, but rather than guess and embarrass myself, want to say something about the connection to GNR? Is there some like functor from action of Zirkle on this stuff or no?
No idea. I mean, it's related to...
The line doesn't do anything for you?
I mean, the only relation to knot homology that I know is the conjecture of Oblong of Rasmussen and Shande, which says that homology of these Hilbert schemes is knot homology for torus links. And that was actually proven by Hoogenkamp and Mellet because you can compute both sides explicitly. But somehow, where is Hilbert scheme of the plane in this picture? I mean, it's also... Rational Schrödinger algebra is quantization of the Hilbert scheme of the plane, but I mean, yeah, it's all kind of far from that. I don't know.
I think I see why the torus knot appears.
Torus knot is the link of this x to the m is equal to y to the m.
Well, yeah, sure, but I mean in the Zirkle side.
I mean, I don't know.
You don't see the Zirkle bimodules here because of sort of the model you're using for the physics, right? Like, you know, somehow they're sneaking in the line operator corresponding to a loop, like the cotangent bundle to a loop in the space of loops into the matter here. But like, you aren't breaking things up in a way where you can see that loop as a break closure. So there's like some serious additional like physics that needs to be done. And I mean, there are a bunch of people working on this, you know, Justin and Lev-Rosansky and
Tudor. Yes. Yeah, maybe, I mean, one general topological comment, which is easy to say, so if you just have a curve on the plane, like what you can do, you can take intersection with a sphere, that's a link in a sphere. If you have a curve with projection on some line, you actually have a link in the solid torus for free, because somehow you split your sphere into two tori, and then you have a link in the solid torus or a braid closure. So this gives you already more information. So this, and the degree of this projection is the number of strands in the braid. But again, like cutting it into open braid, that's hard, I think. And yeah, maybe Lev and Tudor and Justin and other people would do it eventually.
Yeah, but this is already like a central part. You don't want to cut it, right?
Well, if you want to see the Zirkle bimodules, you'd better
cut it.
But I mean, you can't see Zirkle bimodules in the normal GNR thing either. It's just a piece of it.
Yeah. But also you have like a graded ascent representation, or bi-graded ascent representation. So they should correspond to this kind of annular invariant of this grade. And yeah.
Eugene, why did you switch from K-theory to cohomology?
Why did I switch from K-theory to cohomology?
Because before we were computing this stuff in K-theory, and now you're computing it.
Because I don't think in case you get rational.
I mean, you get these like cyclotomic Daha, Braverman, Eddinghoff, and Finkelberg.
Okay.
It works, but nonetheless.
No, you will get some version of Daha, I think, in case you.
Okay, I think we can declare this the switchover from question period to break.